There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
There is no better group of ones for flower power than forms of the shrubby potentilla.
Hello and welcome to This Week in the Garden. I'm Peter Seabrook, here to help with some of your gardening quandaries. But I must confess, I don't know all that much about watercress. It grows wild across the country and is a very popular salad in Britain. Today, I'll be joined by James Harper from the Watercress Company to discuss how you grow it and how good it is for you. My thanks to Mr. Fothergill Seeds, sponsor of this podcast. I usually start this program with a reference to the weather. And at lunchtime last Saturday, the bank holiday Saturday, we had a hailstorm which took the top out of my neighbour's chestnut tree. Just the kind of weather you want, don't you, for a gardening weekend? Fortunately, on Sunday and Monday, it improved a bit. And then we had all the excitement about the royal birth. It's been suggested in amateur gardening that if you want to acknowledge that birth in your garden, then you should think about planting Gypsophila baby's breath, or Dahlia new baby, or Narcissus new baby. Maybe a strange coincidence, but the sweet pea, our Harry, broke into bloom in my polytunnel last weekend, along with Windsor. So whether there's anything in that coincidence, I'll leave you to decide. Sales to gardeners remain very strong, with records broken in every direction over the Easter weekend. Has been suggested by Trevor Pfeiffer that we're so fed up with Brexit that we're all going out into the garden to escape. Well, we certainly need to escape some of that political infighting. I always watch the potting compost sales as the best barometer to see, you know, what gardeners are doing across the land, and particularly when housing is getting so much denser and the area to grow things is being reduced. People switch to containers, and then, of course, they need potting compost. And as you watch the sales, you'll know how active they are. I mean, the leading brand, Levington Multipurpose Compost with a bit of JI, was up 100% last week, with Jack's Magic following it as number two. That was in the GTN Top 50 Growing Media Sales Chart. Interesting, isn't it, that the TV programmes and many gardening columns exclusively recommend peat-free compost, yet there are only three in the top 50 when it comes to sales from garden centres. If you're interested in the most popular, well then, in last week's charts, New Horizon stood at number 33 in the top 50 media sales. There's a lot of discussion too in the trade about the black plastic pots that we use for container plants. And some 80% of the trade have said in a recent survey that they will switch to an alternative once it becomes sensibly available. Although 60% were unsure about the brownish torp pot that's being introduced. I'm uneasy too about that torp pot. I want to see how it stands up to strong sunlight when I reuse it. I mean, black pots that come into my garden don't go out again, well, literally for many years. You know, they're just used, washed, used again, washed, used again. There is a suggestion that we have a pot deposit scheme, almost like money back when you buy a soft drink in a bottle and get money back on the bottle. Be interesting to see whether they can make that work or not. But back home, with a bit of a standard advice, it is worth looking at houseplants. You know, now we're into May, days are longer, temperatures are warmer, all plants, and especially those indoors, are speeding up with their growth. And so it's a very good time, if you've got plants with pots full of root, just to pot them on. Often you'll read, pot them on into a one size larger pot. Yeah, if you try and do that, you find you can't get your fingers between the ball of root and the composter. It's much more practical to go up two sizes of pot, and then you can actually handle it. So if you've got things like Sansevieria with the pots absolutely full of root, well, now's a good time to pot on, or you could split them. Tremendous lot of summer flowering bedding plants are being sold. And there's one or two words of advice. There are some which are quite hardy, the antirrhinums, the snapdragons. But if you're buying those, have a look very closely at the label, because they can vary considerably in height. I'm not a great enthusiast for the very dwarf ones. I like about 15 to 18 centimetre height. The cultivars that will give you that height have got some energy and will make really good plants in flowering borders. But even better, you can cut one or two stems and take them indoors. Antirrhinums make very good cut flowers. Oh, and if you're buying African marigolds, a bit early, I would wait another week or two, I think. And those are much better bought in the green. People like to buy flowers, I know, but when it comes to the African marigold, those big yellow ones, they'll perform much better if you buy them as green plants and get them established in the garden before flowers come. And with the African and French marigolds, watch out for slugs. Boy, they like them. And if the weather's just a little bit moist, they'll strip the leaves off young plantings overnight. All bedding plants, when it comes in cells and small pots, it's worth giving that a dilute liquid feed before you plant. That means the root system has really got something to pull on and give it strength to grow out into the garden soil.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
My guest today for interview is James Harper. He's the commercial manager of the Watercress Company. And quite honestly, apart from eating it quite regularly in my sandwiches, James, I don't know very much about watercress. Now, where are you? How do you grow it? And is it very easy to grow?
Hello, Peter. Thanks for having me on. It is a very specialist crop. When I do regular sort of gardening club talks and horticultural society talks, I always get various questions about growing watercress. So it is possible to grow at home. We'll talk a little bit about that. But we are basically down in Dorset in Hampshire. Now, if you went back about 100 years ago, watercress would be found all over the country. But really, as the areas become more concentrated in the south now because of the quality of the spring water. So we have five farms in Dorset and another five in Hampshire.
Yes, so you spread over two counties.
We do, yeah. We've got a foot in both. And yeah, it's because of the mineral-rich spring water in both. So when it rains in these counties, the chalk that we have in the soil acts basically as a sort of giant filter, and the water slowly permeates through this chalk, enters what's called an underground aquifer, which is a confined aquifer, so it's a large body of water that's under pressure. And you have these faults in the rock where the water naturally bubbles up, millions and millions of very high-quality water. In fact, it's so clean you can drink it at source. And it's these locations is where we have our farms based for watercress production.
I seem to remember that when I was at college at Rittle, in the ditch running round the front border, there was watercress, which the village people used to cut. But I presume sort of health worries will stop that now.
Absolutely. I mean, it's been, as I said, all around the country, but, various and questionable sources of water has made the locations now really these sort of very, very pure and very, very clean areas down in the south of England. You can still find wild watercress. You can find commercially escaped wild watercress over the commercial watercress over the that's escaped over the years and all around the country. But we always say the old adage with watercress: unless you drink the water that it's grown in, I wouldn't eat it. You know, I wouldn't eat it without cooking. And when I do club talks, as I said, we always get somebody who very proudly tells me that he grows this fantastic. It's normally a man, I'm afraid. I produce this fantastic crop of watercress in my pond at home, and you think, well, unless you'd be happy drinking your pond water, it's probably safer to cook the watercress very well before you use it.
A very useful tip. I must try and remember that. If you'll drink the water, then there's absolutely a fair chance you could eat the watercress.
The production that we have, because the water is so clean, I mean, it's like a sort of Volvic or an Evian of the south. It's very, very high quality spring water. In fact, it's so clean, they used to bottle it and sell it, the growers in the 80s, as mineral water. And we have a grower, a producer of gin, who's moved into one of our farms, and he uses the high quality spring water for his gin. So because of we're blessed with this abundance of spring water, which is naturally very high in minerals, and the farms are fully fenced, and it's a one-way flow. So basically it comes from the ground, we just borrow and divert it through the beds, and then it enters the watercourse one way. It's a very, very safe production. So we always say the best way to have it is to eat it fresh.
And you mentioned bed, so can we go into how you actually grow it? I mean, it's an agricultural crop, is it?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's quite a large area. These are some of the beds in Dorset and Hampshire are traditional watercress beds that we've modernised. We've opened them up, but the principle is exactly the same as it was done, you know, hundreds of years ago. In fact, the earliest production was in Kent in 1805, and it's moved its way over to Dorset and Hampshire as you know, London has expanded. It's sort of pushed watercress further and further along. But we use gravel beds, and the reason we use gravel is because it's a very clean method of production. It's inert, it doesn't hold anything. And unlike soil, if you were to produce, as gardeners know who listen to this program, if you were to just grow a brassica or cruciferous vegetables, broccoli or kale, again and again and again without any rotation in your garden, the ground's going to get it's going to get full of club root, it's going to get sick. You have to have rotation. Whereas watercress has been hundreds of years in the same beds, exactly, you know, it's monocropping basically with no rotation. And the reason for that is because of the high quality spring water and the gravel acting as a medium. So it's no need to rotate.
And so is watercress then a brassica?
It is. It's a cruciferous vegetable, so it's part of the same family, yeah. And yeah, it's identified. If you look at some, you know, sometimes during the summer you might see, in the odd bag of watercress, you might see a little white flower. And it's like all cruciferous vegetables, so kale, cabbage, rocket, oilseed rape. You have these little beautiful cross-shaped flowers, cruciferous, hence the cross shape. And they're perfectly edible. It's not, you know, unlike lettuce or spinach or another crop that bolts and goes to flower, you can eat these watercress flowers. They're beautifully sort of delicately peppery, and they don't mean the crop sort of gone over. It's just the natural it's the natural flowering period of the plant during the summer. But even in Victorian times when they were growing it, that people associated flowering crop with something past its best. So actually those days it used to be a winter vegetable. It was farmed all the way through the winter. And then come the spring, this sort of time of year, they would actually shut the farms down and they'd start again in the autumn. And that was because they couldn't stop it going to flower. Now, we've completely flipped the industry on its head, and now everybody thinks of watercress, it's synonymous with the summer, and that's because we produce a seed crop. So we have one crop that we grow from seed, we clear the beds out completely, and then we start again with a seedling crop. We do this until we get to, you know, sort of late July, early August, around about the equinox, when the days start to shorten and the nights lengthen out. And then we move to what we call a regrowth. So it's a little bit like mowing a lawn. We cut the crop, it regrows, and we get several cuts that way when the flowering response has naturally left the plant. But it's absolutely fine if your watercress at home does start to go to flower. There's nothing wrong with it. It looks beautiful. And ironically, now we have more chefs contacting us, trying to ask us to grow edible flowers. when you've got these beautiful little peppery watercress flowers available.
So what's been around comes around, eh?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. But could you just take me step by step? So in the spring, you sow seed where?
Well, we started off years ago. We used to sow seed into big polytunnels. So we would use a mat of peat on the base of a polytunnel. This was sort of January, February. We'd put the seed directly onto the peat, and it looked beautiful. You have these little sort of carpet mats of watercress seedlings all tucked up in the polytunnel. It looked at that stage like mustard and cress, obviously a different plant, but it's a sort of generic brassica sprout. You would then take these clumps of watercress, and they were hand broadcast, so they were literally thrown into the beds. Now, a few years ago, we moved completely away from this production, so we don't use any peat in the business. It's environmentally, we were heating polytunnels in January and using peat, and you have a high loss rate as well, because when you hand broadcast anything, some of it lands the right way up, some goes on its side, some goes upside down, so the loss was considerable. But now we precision drill, so we plant the seed directly into the bed. We use a little substance just to hold it in place, and then once it actually puts a root down and starts to properly take, then it's away in the water. We just increase the water levels and it starts off. And that's what we call a seedling crop. So basically we start off with a seed diet into the bed, one crop, cut it, clear the bed back, wash out the gravel, regrade the gravel, start again. And then later on in the year, we move into the regrowth crop. So we cut it, it recovers a little bit, then we tip or top, depends if you're Dorset or Hampshire. So we flail it back down again to keep it nice and level, nice level stubble. And then you let it regrow, and you can get four or five cuts back from that. So if you like really peppery watercress, it's a good time to have it sort of the end of the summer.
It's actually hotter, is that what you guess?
Yeah, it's one of those, it's an interesting plant. It can be hotter at certain times of the day. It can be hotter certain lengths if you let it grow on a bit. But then I've had some, ridiculously peppery seedlings. So very, very small baby watercress that can be hot. So there are a lot of elements that control the heat within the plant. But I think it's a bit of holiday wine syndrome. You know, when you get a bottle that you try overseas and you bring it back, and you're always a little bit disappointed because you're not sat on a sun-kissed terrace somewhere. Well, the same with watercress. We still get people that regularly say, oh, it's not as hot as I remember. It's not as peppery as I remember. And I think it's a couple of factors. I think taste buds change as you grow old, grow older through life. But also, I think people don't appreciate their food. You know, there is this slow food movement that says you should really take some time with your food rather than just, eat it as fast food and not really appreciate it. And with watercress, we always tell people to chew it as much as possible, because when you slowly chew the watercress, what's happening is you're blitzing the cells of the plant, and you're mixing two compounds, and that's what delivers the peppery isothiocyanates, this peppery plant taste. So if you don't think your watercress is very peppery, just chew it for a little bit longer. Just ruminate and sort of chew it over, and it'll get pepperier and pepperier. And this is why it's so good in other smoothies or other applications.
Goodness, you're giving us some information. It's like every crop or plant, once you really get to a specialist, yeah. It's amazing the detail.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think watercress is quite, I mean, it's so uniquely British, and so many people know about watercress or sort of got memories of watercress. And it falls in and out of fashion. We're seeing a real resurgence at the moment in terms of sales and demand. But everybody knows, elements of watercress. There's a bit of confusion still out there between mustard cress and garden cress and watercress. But to grow it on a large scale is quite a complex niche operation. But it's perfectly doable to grow in the garden. It's it's quite a fun crop to grow at home.
Well, before we get into that, you've spoken about harvesting it from now on a seed grown crop, and then the cut again into the autumn. What happens during the winter?
Well, since about the 80s, we invested in a farm in Spain and a farm in America, actually, believe it or not, and we bring all of that watercress over to the UK. So right the way through the year, we produce watercress, and we're still an independent British company, British owned and run, but for that year round supply and for that critical mass of watercress and to feed the country, you have to have this these overseas farms. So we've got a series of farms, about 19 hectares of farms in southern Spain, which is near Jerez, which is famous for the sherry. And the reason we went over there in the 80s was because, again, it's blessed with an abundance of water. So although it's down in the southern tip of Spain, there's a mountainous region that catches the cloud. It's a very high rainfall, so the quality of the water is excellent over there. And in fact, the village over the road from this farm is actually one of the wettest in Spain. So that's been farming since the 80s. And then in the 90s, we bought a farm in America. Again, because of the abundance of spring water, it gave us a bit of a geographical edge as well, because if you have freezing cold weather in Europe, we were normally okay in America. And that all comes over. So that all comes over for the UK market. So we don't fly cargo planes. That's coming over basically from Orlando, with the people coming back from Walt Disney World. it's in the hold there. And that gets very, very quickly to the supermarkets to allow watercress to be available year round. Because in January, everybody's overdone it at Christmas and the excesses of indulgence. And then come January, the focus is on fitness and health, and our watercress sells. Boom. So it's important to have that critical mass.
It's an ill win. But do the Americans eat it? I mean, I was in California recently.
They do. It's starting to become more popular over there. And there's a sort of Oprah Winfrey of medicine called Dr. Oz, who's a big fan of watercress, is making it very popular, but nothing like the Brits. I mean, we eat probably 10 times that of the nearest nation, which is France, in terms of consumption. I mean, it's a uniquely British crop, and because of our history and heritage, I think. So.
Yeah, now, I eat it fresh as a salad, particularly in sandwiches. I think with just a hint of Bovril and a brown bread,
lovely.
Watercress makes a pretty good sandwich.
Absolutely.
But you mentioned smoothies. I mean, and you've talked about chefs, so...
Yeah, well, we're running something at the moment, which is, I don't know, anybody's on social media, hashtag Watercress Challenge, and we're doing this with the AHDB, the Agricultural Horticultural Development Board. So basically, they're helping us market the crop to chefs, foodies, people at home, anybody really interested in using watercress in interesting, in unusual, perhaps completely brand new recipes. So predominantly, it absolutely, as you said, the best way to eat watercress and the best way to eat any vegetable is to have it fresh and have it raw. And unlike other cruciferous vegetables, sort of kale, broccoli, cauliflower, that you tend to cook, and a lot of the nutrients are then lost when you do cook. Watercress, really, you want to have as raw, as fresh as possible to get the maximum nutritional benefit. But it's fantastic. It's really good as a sort of hero ingredient in a range of dishes. So we're working with a number of chefs who are being very creative and telling us, interesting ways to use it. But a really fun way that we found is in a smoothie, because not only is it, as I said, when you chew the watercress, you break down the plant cells and get the pepperiness and the flavor and the benefits and these peppery isothiocyanates. But also, and I've got very young kids, to get my kids to eat fresh fruit and vegetables is a challenge, but as soon as I put it into a smoothie, fantastic, it's sold. And I actually make these smoothies up and then freeze them into little ice lollies as well, so it's quite fun. And we've been working with the Prince of Wales School in Dorchester, making some smoothies, which you can view online. There's a fun little smoothie video, but it's just a good way to sort of get kids to eat veg.
How do you do it, James? I mean, you just put the watercress into a liquidizer?
Well, absolutely. You can do it. Any recipe that would use spinach or kale, you can just submit a swap and put watercress in. But, I mean, we've come up with quite a nice recipe, which is pineapple juice, a bit of frozen mango, watercress, and, spinach if you've got it. And it's just this lovely, fresh, vibrant green smoothie. But the best way to do it, really, is experiment and just play around.
Well, except I like that pineapple juice thought. So where do we pick up this recipe?
Well, it's on, if you go to watercress.co.uk, there's a range of smoothie recipes. And that's probably the best source of. But then just try it. Any sort of green smoothie or any fruit smoothie. Just try putting some watercress in there.
Yeah. Well, just finally, by absolute coincidence, several weeks ago, I thought it'd be quite a nice idea to get kids at schools to grow watercress, and I've just started in recycled grape punnets to get them to grow it on the school windowsill. I mean, I'm not going to poison them or anything.
No. Well, this is, people always want to grow it at home, and I've had over the years so many people come with elaborate water features and sort of tiered designs, and you know, litres and litres of water and recirculation, and you don't need any of that really to do it at home and to do it with the kids, and that's fantastic to recycle something. So all these fruit punnets that are sent to landfill, to actually use these and recycle them is a fantastic thing to do. And safely do it at home. The best method is just a bit of damp compost. So it doesn't have to be, you know, a sort of water feature. It doesn't have to be swimming in water. You just need to keep your compost nice and moist on a windowsill. Thinly, very, very thinly scatter seed on the top. Within about 4 to 5 weeks, you'll have a nice crop of watercress. But if you can't get watercress seed, or you don't, you know, you want to try another way, you can actually grow it from the bags that you get in the supermarket.
I'm afraid that's the way I did, the shortcut.
It works very well. It works very, very well.
You put them in a glass of water, they got roots in 5 days, which is a kid's love.
You can also plant those, as well as in the water, you can plant it straight into compost. But I've seen it done, people put too much of a sprig in. You want to actually break it down a little bit, like any sort of cutting. You only really need the node, you need, you know, just a strike from a small amount of stem. But it's amazing what watercress will come back from.
James, I hope we can work together in the future to see if we can't get a few more children at school.
That'd be fantastic. Yeah, it'd be really good.
But thank you very much. Fascinating hearing behind the scenes in your production.
Thanks for having me.
What's on? Well, we've got the Malvern Flower Show, 9th to the 12th of May. And, of course, there is the Rose Society competition there. I have one or two roses showing a bit of colour in my polytunnel, so I hope that there are enough members of the Rose Society with some really nice bloom to make a good show at Malvern. On the 12th of May, it's Celebrate Garden Day, when it's suggested that we actually invite people into our garden. Now, I'm 100% behind that. You know, there are two pleasures with growing plants. First, the satisfaction growing them well, and then, of course, sharing the results. And so a garden share day sounds like a very good idea to me, and you can get all the details on the website gardenday.co.uk. And my thought for the day, experience is a good teacher, but she sends in terrific bills. My thanks to Mr. Fothergill Seeds, sponsor of this podcast, and thanks to you for listening. Enjoy your garden. We'll be back next Thursday. Discover more at sungardening.co.uk.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.